All right, lawyer talk off the record on the air. You know, we stay away from political stuff here, but yeah. Sometimes it's just too juicy and tempting not to jump on it. Mm. Nick Fuentes.
The infamous.
I mean, look, and we're not going to take any positions here. What we are going to do is talk about, well, you'll see. Anyway, Trump gets elected in 24. And in November of 24, Fuentes apparently tweets, "Your body, my choice forever." And this, of course, goes viral because it upsets whoever is in favor of pro-choice movement.
Yes.
So about half the country.
Yeah.
So that upsets people. And that gets his home address doxxed. So I guess people start knocking on his door.
We can do it on a separate episode, but I didn't know doxing was actually a crime where you're not allowed to dox.
I don't know if it is a crime.
And we can talk about that.
Yeah, that's a different thing. So anyway, self in something today. And I sort of feel like that's what Fuentes was dealing with. Like, he probably had a lot of this stuff going on. There'd probably been a bunch of people knocking on his door. There'd probably be a bunch of people blowing him up. And, you know, you would say, those who don't like him would say, well, look, you're a public figure. You've put yourself out there. What do you think was going to happen when you tweeted that and when you pour gasoline on these politically incendiary issues? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going into that. It is what it is. But Fuentes' response is probably too much force to deal with what he was dealing with. The reason I put it that way is because we do have a right of self-defense in your house. In fact, not that this was a gun case, but if you look at D.C. versus Heller, the U.S. Supreme Court has said the core value of the Second Amendment is protection of your home, meaning our home is our castle. It goes way back to common law days. Mm-hmm. So we have a right to protect our homes, but you can't use unreasonable force to repel what is happening. And this isn't even an attack. It's not an entrance into his home. Somebody knocking on the door, that's different than somebody actually trying to force their way in. Now, what would make this different?
It made it different if she was trying to come in.
Yeah, like, so if he's saying, don't come in.
Yeah, but I mean, if he's sitting there with a locked door that she doesn't seem to be making any attempts to come in, I mean, couldn't he just call the police to have her leave?
Or he doesn't have to even answer the door. Or he could. It also might be different if he would have said, I don't want you on my doorstep, leave.
Yeah.
Now, if she doesn't leave, it's a whole different deal. She's trespassing. She's been ordered to leave. So reasonable force is permitted. Now, what is reasonable force? I don't know.
It depends.
Would this be reasonable force? So if she's saying, I'm not leaving, I'm staying right here, and he's asked her two or three times, maybe this is reasonable force then. Mm-hmm. The pepper spray, certainly. I mean, the push down, I don't know. It's a lot.
Maybe if he's asked her that many times and the cops haven't come, I'm thinking pepper spray. Now, I'm not totally depending on the cops either. Like, I'm just,
no, not in my house. You bet you're, I'm not either. Now and it's understood. I don't know if we've said it yet, but you can't use deadly force in this situation. And Fuentes did not use deadly force. This isn't deadly force by any means. This is non-deadly force. He has used pepper spray and pushed her to the ground. It's not deadly force. I also don't think that it would have been worse, actually, had he have pursued her further. So gets her off the front stoop. He then goes after her and gives her a smackdown then. That might be a little bit different.
Yeah.
So if I'm defending Fuentes here, I would say, look, he used reasonable force necessary to get this person off his porch. The prosecutor's going to say, wait a minute, this wasn't even a trespass yet because he didn't even try to ask her to leave first.
We also get this clip. We don't know what was going on beforehand.
No, we don't know. Right. So you're right. You would want to know. And that's a great point. When we get these cases, we're working on one right now.
Yes.
Not going to talk about it, but we're working on one right now where it's like a video ambush type thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's always more to it than meets mm-hmm. the eye. You'd want to get all the footage before, during, and after. You'd want to know if this person has any contact with Fuentes outside this incident. So maybe in another day she was calling him, or maybe she's constantly trolling him. Maybe there's a history that would warrant something a little bit more. Maybe there's not. I don't know. But you'd want to know those things.
Yeah.
And so Fuentes uses what is non-deadly force. Prosecutors are going to say, look, it's unreasonable, non-deadly it may be, but still unreasonable because you didn't need to use this amount of force to get this person off your stoop. Or maybe better put, you didn't even know if you needed force to get this person off your stoop because you could have just said, leave.
Yeah.
And then if you didn't leave, you could have closed the door. If she didn't leave, you could close the door. As you said, call the police. I don't know. So what does Fuentes do? Apparently he goes into court up in Illinois and he enters into a
diversion program.
Deferred prosecution agreement. Oh. So that's what they called it up there.
Oh, okay.
And this is the point of what we're doing. So I'm not here to talk about Nick Fuentes. I could care a hill of beans about Nick Fuentes. He doesn't impact my day in any significant way, but the legal issues I am interested in. Mm-hmm. And we get a lot of questions, even in our own practice, about this kind of stuff. And this is, by the way, state by state. Need we say it again? We operate in Ohio, and in fact, we did a show recently about the keys in the ignition on a DUI and whether it was running, and there's a lot of debate back and forth, and people are saying, no, you're wrong. Look, I'm talking about Ohio.
Yeah.
And these are nuanced. Some of these are really nuanced issues, and I bring them up because they're interesting. Mm-hmm. But we get this question, like deferred prosecution or diversion. What the heck is it? We're going to give our budding young lawyer a chance at it.
It's in my head. It's when they don't actually pursue the crime. They want you to do some steps. It's almost like a pre-probation thing. We want you to do these certain programs, lessons, and then we're not going to actually pursue this case. We're just going to dismiss it.
Call it probation in advance. And, you know, we call it diversion here in Ohio. And here's how it works in Ohio. Here's how it works in Ohio. The Ohio Revised Code lets prosecutors establish a diversion program for their local jurisdictions. So it's not like there's a statewide mandate in Ohio about here's what diversion is. It is at the prosecutor's office discretion. Mm-hmm. And prosecutors will often establish diversion programs. And diversion programs are sort of exactly what you're talking about. Typically, you sign an agreement, and I'll talk about whether this requires a guilty plea or not, but you sign an agreement that says, I will do certain things. And these certain things may depend on the case. So if it's an alcohol-related case, the I will do certain things might include alcohol assessment plus follow-up counseling. It might include community service. If you're a younger idiot and you've gotten caught bashing mailboxes with a baseball bat, it might include repairing and or paying for the repair of the mailboxes.
Benchwarmers does a great job at that. If you want to take notes on how to do it.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know what Benchwarmers is.
Oh, it's a movie. They're on the back of a truck and they're driving by, smashing mailboxes.
Oh, I'm thinking Stand By Me when they were playing mailbox baseball.
Generational difference here.
Yeah, there you go. I think it was the anniversary of Stand. Anyway, what the heck are we talking about?
Smashing mailboxes.
Smashing mailboxes. I never did that. So it might be include fixing whatever property damage, or if you got caught stealing, you got to pay back the property, complete like an anti-theft program or get a little counseling or do something like that. And typically think like 6 months to a year around here for diversion. And if you complete the diversion program, the charges are dismissed. You're not prosecuted. And they often immediately on the heels of that will come with an expungement or a record sealing or something that sort of erases it. Now there's nuances to this. And we have them both for felonies and some misdemeanors in Ohio. Some misdemeanor courts do it. But there's some nuances. Some courts require a guilty plea in advance, meaning I go plead guilty to the charge and I have to complete all these things. And if I don't, the guilty plea gets filed and enforced and you go to jail and they throw out the key and you never get out, or maybe not all that harsh, but you get prosecuted. And the guilty plea is then journalized, we would say, and takes effect. So now you're found guilty and you've got to deal with it. Other places I've been, and you don't have a guilty plea, you just got to complete the program. And if you don't, the prosecution begins. We did another episode recently about speedy trial.
Yeah.
And this might be a waiver of your speedy trial rights. So how would that work?
You are going to knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily waive your constitutional right to a speedy trial, and it's going to toll the entire time you're doing this diversion.
Postpone it, right. Yeah. Right. So we couldn't, in other words, say at the same time I'm getting the benefit of a diversion program, you didn't prosecute me in time. By agreement, you're going to waive your right to a speedy trial. So the program is allowed to be implemented and completed. Mm-hmm. And we would call that diversion. And apparently in Fuentes' case, they call it deferred prosecution. And this came with some, I think, probably some community service, I think I saw. Let's see what we got. An apology letter. I'm sure it was a very sincere apology. I wish I could read it.
There has been a claim, though, by the victim that there is no proof that Fuentes actually completed these diversion programs and is now suing him in civil court also.
So, yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. So yeah. Following the doxing, a 57-year-old woman went to his Illinois home on November 10th, 2024 to record a video. Fuentes allegedly pepper sprayed her, took her phone, and pushed her down the stairs. He was later charged with battery. Battery is fancy talk for assault. In common law, assault was like the verbal and battery was the touch. Some jurisdictions still use that language. In December of 24, Fuentes claimed he was the target of an armed intruder who killed his neighbor's dog, which was confirmed by local police, indicating an escalation of safety threats. But it looks like this incident predated the December thing, so I'm not really sure.
I was wondering what he picked up at the end there. That was her phone. He had to pay for her phone.
Yeah, so there we go. Perfect diversion type or deferred prosecution type requirement. So the agreement terms in 25, I don't understand, because this says October of 25. I don't get all these dates, so none of this is adding up. But anyway, assuming it does add up on some level that I don't understand, Fuentes agreed to a deal that required him to apologize to the victim, Marla Rose, pay roughly $635 in restitution, probably for her phone, attend anger management, which is a counseling program. I'll talk about anger management in a second because that can be a big kick in the backside. Anger management, and complete 75 hours of community service. That's actually quite a bit of community service.
Yeah.
Now you could say, well, 75 hours, that's nothing. It's all relative, folks. I had somebody recently had to complete like 12 to 16 hours. 75 is a big number in general terms, comparative terms, I guess.
I mean, that's 2 weeks of work when you think about it.
Yeah, that's a lot. Anger management around here. So here's what happens. You have to complete an anger management program. Just so happens we have some facilities around here that their job is to supply anger management counseling. And sometimes they'll say, be evaluated to see if you qualify or see if you need anger management, which is a lot like asking a barber if you need a haircut. It's like, you know, hey, do I need a haircut, Mr. Barber? Well, yeah, I could probably take some off. So yeah, you sure do. Sit down right here and it'll cost you $25. So anger management programs cost a lot of money and they take a lot of time. There's a couple different varieties around here. Some are very short depending on the court, but a lot in the old day, I mean, 26 weeks weekly. If you miss one, you start over. If you don't agree that you got an anger problem, you can't be fixed. And if you can't be fixed, you can't complete the program. And if you can't complete the program, you get kicked out of diversion. I mean, they sound easy, but they're not always so easy. So then they, around here, we've created some sort of lesser or anger management light. So I don't know what's less than anger is. Impatient program.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows? But anyway, a little bit of counseling. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll have my client legitimately assessed by an actual counselor and ask the court to consider using a private counselor. And this isn't just to get out of the anger management. A lot of times this is because I happen to believe in cognitive behavioral therapy. I think it works. I think it's helpful to people. And when you try to cram an individual into a cookie cutter program, while it might be beneficial because it makes sense that we're going to treat everybody the same, maybe your client gets more out of some individualized help. And then sometimes that backfires and you go, oh, great idea. Let's do both. Anyway, there was an apology requirement. And Marla Rose, as you pointed out, expressed dissatisfaction, describing it as boilerplate and questioning if it was heartfelt. I'm sure Nick Fuentes was very heartfelt when he wrote his apology letter.
When ChatGPT wrote his apology letter.
I'm sure. As of April 26, the criminal battery case was dropped after the court deemed the agreement satisfied. However, the victim stated she did not believe he fully completed the requirements and initiated a separate civil suit against Fuentes. All right. I don't think her separate civil suit has anything legally to do with whether she thinks that he actually completed successfully the terms and conditions of his deferred prosecution. I think it's about money.
Absolutely.
Right. So, you know, so did he commit a battery, an assault? Yes. What's the value of that case?
She says she's got 6 broken ribs.
You ever broken any ribs?
No. I could imagine it's extremely painful, especially if you broke 6 of them. How many do we have?
I don't know. A lot. Let's Google that.
This
is lawyer talk, not medical talk, right? Not doctor talk. How many ribs do we have? I know we have a floating rib.
I know Charlie. Doesn't Charlie Manson get like 2 of them removed or something like that? I don't know.
How many ribs does a person have? This is very helpful information, folks. We have 24 ribs. So she broke 1/4 of her ribs. Is that right? Is that the right math?
Also, not math talk.
This isn't math talk either. 6 broken ribs. I don't buy it.
Maybe she's hyping up the word broken. Maybe they were
bruised. Well, I mean, look, it's Google. It's got to be right.
Yeah. But that's how she interprets it, where the medical report would say otherwise.
All right. So look, let's talk about a civil suit. We don't do a whole lot of civil work. We should get Goldstein down here. We have a colleague that does it. Anyway, we're going to talk about it anyway, even though this isn't legal advice, folks. It's never legal advice. It's just a conversation about legal stuff. Mm-hmm. All right. So 6 broken ribs. If I assault you, in theory, I have committed an assault. And an assault could be criminal and it could be civil. In civil context, we call it a battery. So I've said, you're a no good, rotten SOB. I guess I'm might be a verbal assault. And then I commit the battery and I punch you in the chin or the mustache because of it. Mm-hmm. And let's say I do severe damage to your mustache and, or I break your ribs in this situation, or let's say I don't. So now I've got the assault, which is an actionable tort, T-O-R-T. It's not a tart. It's not like a fancy dessert, mm-hmm. nor a streetwalker. It is a tort. In tort law, it's injury law. It means I can sue people for money if somebody does something to me like that.
Yeah.
And assault is a tort. Mm-hmm. Battery is a tort. The problem is going to be you're taking a bar exam. What's the problem with this?
The problem I have is like the damages.
Damages is the problem, right? What's the value of the case?
And it's the medical bills. I could see that very objectively, but then she's going to say the emotional part of it.
All right. So we have medical bills, which are actual damages, mm-hmm. or special damages, as some people call them, or whatever. But and medical bills, if you lose work as a result of this horrific assault, then that could be stuff you can quantify, I guess. So medical bills. Now, that might be diminished a little bit by your insurance. So you might end mm-hmm. up with a deductible, and then in theory, the insurance company would collect from you. But anyway.
Yeah.
Medical bills, you have lost work or wages, pain and suffering, start to get into that gray area.
That's not very
so
black
some
and
pain
white.
And suffering. If you can't have sex with your spouse, maybe a little bit of loss of consortium.
Is that a real?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's not just sex, but anyway. Yeah. Anyway, it's we'll let the civil guys jump all over that one. No pun intended. If I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. All right, so you've got, what are we talking about?
We're talking about sex with spouses.
We're talking about Nick Fuentes. Now, how you got to that from Nick Fuentes, I'd like to know. Anyway, you're talking about things that you can put a number on. Mm-hmm. And maybe some things you can't really put a number on. And then you've got like what you call emotional distress, which is another tort. So, you know, I can sue people for intentional infliction of emotional distress. That gets a little squirrely too. Now there you would have to probably bring in evidence that you've had to go to counselors or whatever your damages are. So these things all sound great on bar exam law. They sound really horrible when you're a personal injury attorney trying to earn a living and you see this.
Yeah.
However, there is that pesky concept out there called nuisance value. Mm. Did they teach you about that in law school?
No.
Nuisance value. You've never heard that term. I'll bet you everybody out here has heard it. And you're in law school.
Never heard of it, but is it something to do with how she went to the place?
No, so it's like there's a certain pain in the acidness of having to deal with a lawsuit, so you just settle it.
Oh, yeah.
So there's nuisance value. So it's a nuisance for me to have to deal with this, like it's a little ankle biter. Here, take mm-hmm. your money and run. And a lot of times you see this with the celebs. So the rich, wealthy celebrity people or people in the public eye get sued for something. What's his face? One of the Baldwins, Alec Baldwin, I think, did something to a camera guy, and he probably paid some nuisance value.
I think it was after the whole Rust incident.
Yeah, he beat somebody up or did something, and yeah, it's like or like one of the paparazzi guys. And those have nuisance value because these guys have a lot of money. They don't want to be in the public eye any more than they are, and they don't need the bad publicity, or they just don't feel like the headache of it. So we're just going to settle it. This happens a lot, by the way. It's happening in a case I'm working on right now. I'm representing somebody in traffic court. She says, I didn't run the red light. It was green. The other person says she ran. It was pink, or she ran it, or whatever it was. And there was some property damage, no personal injury. But your insurance company is just going to pay it and take responsibility. And there might even be like a little medical malclaim or medical claim.
Yeah.
And the insurance company just says, look, I don't care. This is not about the principal for the insurance company. It's about look, it's going to cost us $50,000 to hire a lawyer to fight a case that we could settle for 10. We're going to take the 10.
Yeah.
And we don't care if your rates go up. They're going up anyway, by the way, because it's an incident on your insurance. Too bad. Fuentes, your rates are going up. You're getting sued. Now, the question is, would this be covered under his homeowner's insurance? Maybe.
Looks like he's in an apartment, though.
Well, maybe his renter's insurance. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Usually intentional torts like this. By intentional, we mean like an assault, something you did on purpose. Negligent acts are often covered by insurance. Intentional, not typically, but sometimes, every now and then, something will be covered. This is like you get a super expensive insurance or umbrella policy sometimes. Not always, but sometimes. So there's some nuisance value here. Maybe she'll get some money. I don't know. Back to the ribs. I played football. I personally was on the line. I didn't get the moniker skilled position. I was a lineman.
He's big boned.
I was very big boned. I wasn't fat. I was big boned. But I had some buddies who broke ribs, and guess what? They're sitting up all night, like can't cough. You can't, we used to thought it was funny to try to make them laugh because it would cause them so much pain.
Great friends.
That's what you do in your 20s playing college football. Anyway, so look, breaking six ribs is a heck of a thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to breathe when you break six ribs. And I don't think if she actually cracked six ribs, she's getting up and doing what she's doing. I mean, maybe it was just the adrenaline that kept her going. So who am I to say she didn't break the ribs? But if I were representing Mr. Fuentes, which I'm not, I would be asking for all the medical records, and I would be asking for doctors, or she would have to probably on some level bring in proof to relate her broken ribs to that incident somehow. In order to prove her claim, who knows? So look, will she be successful in civil court? My guess, my vote is no, but there might have some nuisance value. I don't know how much money Fuente, I mean, what does he make? I don't know.
I have no idea, but
see what his net worth
is. I just
is.
See his.
See, AI knows everything. Let's see who's got it first.
In my head, if you have that much money, I don't think you live in an apartment and outside Chicago, down range from 1 to 2 million based on Apple Podcast.
All right, donation structure. Significant point. So his income is primarily driven by direct donations, super chats from supporters on Rumble, along with merchandise and $100 a month subscriptions to a private chat room. It's like, that's the last place. Anyway, never mind. A significant portion of his funding comes from a small group of loyalists. Approximately 550 donors contributed nearly 46% of his total donations, totaling $407,000 in 2026. Reports indicate he was paid over $30,000 by Kanye West's presidential campaign. Estimated net worth as of mid-2025 was $1 to $2 million. This figure varies based on analysis. Operates in the underground. Man. So look, he's got some cash.
Yeah.
You know, what's a $50,000 he may settle it. Like where the question is where the curves cross for him. And you know, if you think that this is cheap to defend, if you're a lawyer, it's not. I mean, you're going to get lawyers, they're going to charge you hourly, and it's going to cha-ching, 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 every phone call, every email, every whatever. I hate lawyers. We'll do that to you in the civil world, and it may make sense just to settle the case instead of going to court and fighting the case. And then you get others, like say the president, who would say, I don't care. I'm not settling under any, I'm never, or maybe he didn't, I don't know. But you have people that say, I'm going to trial out of principle, and they don't care because they got all the money in the world. Mm-hmm. So who knows? We shall see. If you've got questions or comments, look, some of this was tongue in cheek, but the point is we should probably talk a little bit more. Because the point was, we're talking about deferred prosecution. There are other options often available, in these kind of situations. One of them, I think, is sort of a kissing cousin to our diversion program around here, is something called ILC.
Never heard of her.
Well, ILC is intervention in lieu of conviction. I don't know why we had to change it to intervention, but back when I started practicing, it was called treatment in lieu of conviction, which made perfect sense because if you've got an alcohol or drug problem or a substantial psychological condition that contributed or directly caused your criminal behavior, then you could go into a deferred prosecution type of agreement and complete treatment or now intervention, because I guess it sounds
better,
woker,
maybe,
I guess. I don't know. Look, intervention, treatment, what's the difference? Anyway, Now it's intervention in lieu of conviction. You can go complete your, quote, intervention program. And if you do so successfully, then the case will be dismissed. Those almost always universally work the way I talked about before. You go enter a guilty plea. I just did one. You enter a guilty plea, feels like a guilty plea, sounds like a guilty plea. You open court. I hereby plead guilty. I waive all my rights. And then you even get sentenced often. So I'm going to sentence you to 3 years in prison, but I'm not going to file this document just yet. I'm not going to journalize it just yet. It doesn't count yet. And we're going to hold it for a year. And if you complete your intervention program within that year, then you are going to have your case dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, then we're going to implement the sentence that we've already imposed and bye-bye, baby. So the idea is to leave a hammer out there. It's called intervention in lieu of conviction, treatment in lieu of conviction. Typically would exclude any violent offenses. It often excludes government employee private or government employee public trust type things. Certain levels of offenses, if F1s and 2 or higher level offenses in Ohio, you don't get intervention in lieu or even diversion. So anyway, a lot of it depends on what you're charged with, but great options. We often use them. And even when people don't have, or even when a jurisdiction doesn't have one of those programs in place or it doesn't fit for whatever reason, we often will fashion our own.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where good creative lawyering matters. So we'll go to the prosecutor and say, look, not qualifying for diversion, or maybe you don't have a diversion. Why don't we make one up? How about I have my client go get some counseling? Let's just kick this case down the road for a few weeks or a few months. I'm going to have my client evaluated. He's going to get some counseling. He's going to complete some community service. He's going to come back, and trust me, you're going to be so happy with him, Mr. Prosecutor. You're going to dismiss the case or make it just a meaningless misdemeanor of some sort with very little punishment. So we sometimes get creative and make up our own.
Mm.
All right. So I don't know if you heard any of that here first, but you did hear it here. LawyerTalkPodcast.com. If you've got a question, or people are asking, how do I get your full podcast if I want to hear one? You go to LawyerTalkPodcast.com. Or you can go to Apple, or you can go to Google, wherever you get your podcast. It's there, but an easy place is to go to Lawyer Talk Podcast, and you just click it, and it's done. So you got a question, you can leave it in the comments. Go to the website. We'll be happy to answer it off the record on the air. Till now. By the way, we're sponsored by Circle 270 Media. Phenomenal. If you've got a podcast that you want, if you're in the Central Ohio area, even nationally, great podcast consultant, check out Circle 270 Media. Brett over there will take care of you.